This is the Life in the Front Office Plus, where we dive deeper into personal and professional development, share nuggets and highlights from previous episodes, and bring you new content to provide insights and perspectives beyond the front office. Enjoy today's episode.
In your Hall of Fame speech, looking, is it, you know, the relationship, describe a little bit the relationship. We've all have mentors that are in this business, but you've had the opportunity to work with and for Bill Russell, David Stern, a number of others. Maybe talk a little bit about some of those people that really had had an influence on you.
Yeah, certainly I would suggest that a great skill to have is picking great bosses. And I have a history of being fortunate to work for some of the most outstanding people in our industry and have obviously taken a lot away from them. But it really started with the head of PR and marketing for the Sonics, a guy by the name of Dave Watkins. When I thought my career was over, he asked if I'd like to work part-time in the media relations office while I was going to the University of Washington. And, you know, without that, I wouldn't be here today. Dave was one of the most creative minds, still a friend of mine, was at my Hall of Fame induction. And, you know, I think that I hope that what people take away from their bosses is trying to find the two or three things that make them incredibly outstanding. Maybe adopt those mannerisms or procedures yourself, but never try to imitate the person you're learning them from, because that doesn't work. You want to make the best of your own abilities and talents, but hopefully you learn from the people around you, and especially your bosses, like how to be effective in different situations. And, you know, I'm not like any of those people that you mentioned, but I definitely have a part of each of their management styles and personalities that I try to express in my own way when I'm, you know, trying to be a leader.
Well, and Rick, you talked a little bit about, you know, having the skill of picking good bosses. Might there be something to it, and might there be something you've learned along the way that you could share with others, in whether it's through the interview process, whether it's through networking or mentors or people that you meet along the way during your career, that you can kind of pick out those things that maybe stick out to you of someone you would like to work for?
You know, I think really it's a combination of the person that you know you'd be working directly with and or for, and the situation as you analyze it. So I've always been attracted to what I viewed were really high potential but terribly unperforming organizations. And then if you can combine that with somebody that you think you can learn from and who you perceive to be a good leader, you all automatically have a great opportunity. So when I first met this young lawyer at the NBA, David Stern, he was not commissioner, and he was trying to form a business organization at the NBA. And I had seen for myself what the NBA could be in a market like Seattle when we won a championship, and how powerful it could be. That wasn't the NBA in 1982 when I got there. It was a league that was much maligned, a lot more talk about franchises going out of business than expanding. First league tainted with widespread accusations of player drug use. Ownership spent more time talking about how to contract than to expand. It was a mess on the national level, but I'd seen what it could be. And I saw in Stern somebody that I knew could be a passionate leader. Fast forward to Phoenix, when I had the opportunity to go there, one of the storied franchises, well-respected franchise in our league. At the time that Jerry Colangelo called me, the team was in very bad shape. We were in difficult financial shape. I spent the first year, you know, every other week trying to figure out how we were going to meet payroll. But I had also seen what that franchise had historically meant in that market and believed we could restore it to that. And with Jerry there, I knew we would have that opportunity. And I guess lastly, here at the Warriors, same thing. I didn't know Joe Lacob or Peter Guber before our first interview, but I had looked at the Warriors, like a lot of people in our industry, for 20 years and said, oh, my God, if you could ever get this in the right ownership and management hands, this has got every factor you would want to have the potential to be amazingly successful. And it's turned out that way. It's never a guarantee, but so I think for me, it's a combination of seeing a leader that you resonate with and believe you can learn something from, but also picking opportunities where you really can see there's a chance to do something really successful. And I think those have been the two factors that have combined for me. It starts with kind of a belief that sports franchises have a special place in communities, and that we have an opportunity to influence our communities in ways that are much bigger than our economic size. Warriors wouldn't show up as one of the 200 biggest businesses in the Bay Area, but we have an outsized impact because of what we do and the high profile individuals that play on our team. And I think that the organizations I've been a part of have embraced that in a very big way and have chosen to make part of their brand, their own organizational DNA, the commitment that you're going to take this amazing platform that you've been given and you're going to utilize it in a way that improves the lives of people in your community. Maybe that sounds a little corny, but I don't think it is. I actually even think it's a good business strategy in addition to being the right thing to do, because we deal in a human product, and human products have failings. And when bad things happen, I think people can fairly look at your organization and decide whether or not you deserve the benefit of the doubt based on how you've conducted yourself and your business in your community. And I think each of the organizations I've been involved in has made that a high priority, and I don't think it's ever steered us wrong. Well, maybe consistent with where Pat was going in his prior comment, they were all kind of born out of big problems, right? And it was trying to find a solution to those problems. So we had, a one-day all-star event prior to 1984, and we were starting a business organization, and I was trying to get out there and talk about the virtues of investing in the NBA, which was not going so well. David Stern had been elected commissioner but had not taken office. We were going to Denver in 1984, and they have a great ABA heritage, and had hosted the ABA All-Star Game in 1976, where the famous ABA slam dunk contest took place, and Julius Erving became legend overnight by winning that. And I was home one night and kind of depressed about my job, and saw a Cracker Jack Old Timers game from Washington, D.C., and watched some guy who's probably about my age now hit a home run over the Cracker Jack sign in left field. And a whole bunch of dots connected for me. So Stern had talked about the NBA had never done a good job of being in touch with its history and celebrating its history, and he was going to make a big part of doing that. So for me, was going to Denver, their ABA heritage. Carl Shearer, the general manager there, said, "Hey, why don't we do a slam dunk contest at halftime?" And had to tell him that CBS had other plans at halftime. But somehow those dots connected overnight, and I went into Stern and said, "What if we did a second day of events?" For me, I think I could actually sell sponsorships to those events. We could have an old timers game that brings back all these players you want to celebrate. We could have a slam dunk contest that celebrates Denver's ABA heritage. We could sell tickets for a second day. And I think we could talk the Entertainment and Sports Programming Network, as it was called then, ESPN today, into actually recording it and maybe making a show out of it. And better to be lucky than good. I actually sold a few things for the first time in my NBA career. And we were off to the races. Dream Team was how to get NBA players integrated into Olympic competition, where we had not ever been allowed to participate. And it was a long, many-year process we could discuss about how we had to earn our way into the international basketball community. And then did it with a splash in 1992 with the Dream Team. The WNBA was about how to, how do we take this organization we built and deploy it in another way that would also build the sport of basketball? Came the 1996 Atlanta Olympics, which will always be remembered as I think the American women's Olympics, they excelled in everything from gymnastics to softball to basketball, everything. And we were able to do some things a couple of years leading up to that, that used that Olympics as a platform to launch a women's professional sports league that is in existence 22 years later today. So they were all a little bit answers to problems, but out of those problems, there were opportunities that, you know, presented themselves and resulted in some things I'm really proud of career-wise.
Thanks for listening to today's episode on the Life in the Front Office Plus. And remember to share with a friend or colleague, leave a review, and tune in to each weekly or monthly episode across our shows.